Did you just do the... What is that?
I crossed him.
You blessed the cat after he sneezed.
Yeah. He's been a little, demon-y.
We got demons!
Yes.
Demons! Welcome back to the Bug and a Rug podcast. As always, my name is Caitlin.
As usual, I'm Whitney.
And we want to welcome you guys back to our newest episode.
This
week at some time.
Yeah, I don't know what day we'll post it on. The bad news is, the good news is we're back. The bad news is, this isn't going to be as musical as last week.
Aww.
Well, I can't say that for sure.
You can't stop me.
You can't stop the beat. You can't stop the motion of the ocean on a Saturday night.
You can't stop the motion of the ocean. What is that musical from?
I don't even think it's Saturday. I think it's Friday. You can't stop the motion of the ocean on a Friday. I have no idea.
Is that from High School Musical?
You can't stop the beat. I think it's Hairspray.
Is it Grease? It is Hairspray. You're absolutely right. Hairspray is a good musical.
Hairspray is... underrated.
Except John Travolta's in it, and he's in Scientology. Wah, wah.
I mean, just because he's in Scientology doesn't mean he's a horrible person.
Okay.
Doesn't mean he's a good person.
Anyway, we want to start out with a few things. The first thing is we want to give a huge thank you to everyone who has been interacting with our Facebook page. I'm just trying to ignore the John Travolta thing, so we're going to move past it.
How can you ignore his acting skills in Hairspray? He did great.
I never said he was a bad actor.
You just don't agree with the Scientologist.
Do you?
No.
Okay. We want to give a huge thank you to everybody who has interacted on our Facebook page. Some people are from different countries, and that's great. So we want to thank everybody. Keep it coming, you know? And if you like the Facebook page, you know, join it. You know, send us a direct message. If you have any ideas, get a hold of us. You know, we'd love to talk to you guys, anybody.
Share it with your friends. A few of you guys have been tagging your friends in the different posts, asking if they've heard of the folk monster, or if it's similar to someone, to a cryptid in your local area.
Yeah.
It's been really cool to see people get into the story. We have over 500 likes on that post right now about the folk monster on Facebook.
Yeah, so, you know, it's cool. Let's keep it up. I like it.
Keep the ocean, the motion of the ocean, rolling.
Okay.
Roll tide.
Okay. The second thing I want to say is that we got a new iTunes review. It's by someone called One New Fan. It's titled Spooktacular Podcast. It says, a mix of comedic, witty banter and the retelling of true crime/creepy stories. Caitlin and Winnie are awesome hosts and make you feel like you're listening to your best friends. I love it. You'll love it. Give it a listen, but be prepared. You may not sleep like a bug in a rug if you do.
Ooh. Hey, good review.
Yes.
5 stars?
Yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Of course. All 5 stars.
All 5 stars. We have 5-star reviews across the board.
Yeah.
How many?
We only have 6 ratings, but that's okay.
6 5-star reviews.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
100%.
100%, yeah.
Batting 1,000?
Yes.
Is that a good baseball score?
I don't know any fun phrases like that and their meaning.
I don't know anything about baseball.
I use them out of context. But you have an announcement about our iTunes reviews.
I worked on
a little something-something that we're going to do.
So we've been working on some exciting things for you guys. So we have decided to make stickers!
Woo! Woo!
We like stickers probably more than the average person.
Yes.
And so we decided to make Bug in a Rug stickers.
Mm-hmm.
We will be posting a picture of them when they come in. They are on their way. But what we'd like you guys to do is if you leave us an iTunes review.
Or a Facebook review.
Or a Facebook review. then take a screenshot of your review and send it to us in an email at
biarpodcast@gmail.com. You can send it in a DM if you want to, too, if that's easier. That's totally fine.
But send it to us, you know, and put your address in there so that we can see your address and we will send you a sticker.
And this goes for the people who have already reviewed, and then people who haven't reviewed, if you just leave us a review, like we just said, screenshot it, everybody, send it to us, and we'll be sending out those stickers.
Yeah, as soon as they get in, we will let you guys know. We'll post it on all the social media along with a little picture of it.
Yay!
They're cute, and we just want to show you guys some thanks for supporting us and leaving those reviews.
Yeah, because it's completely free. We just want a review.
Yeah, we just want you guys to spread the word about our podcast.
Yes.
Dogs.
Speaking of podcasts, you have a story to tell me.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're doing right now. Podcast stories.
Was that a good segue?
Listen, guys, we're really bad at segues, and we're not that great at intros.
Yeah, we've started this intro like 6 times. So if you've made
it this far, this is our 6th take. But if you've made it this far, I'm very excited to tell you about today's topic.
Yes.
So, hopefully today, after telling you this story, which is based on real events.
Okay.
Absolutely real events. Hopefully after listening, you will still be able to sleep as snug as a bug in a rug.
Ooh, true crime.
It is true crime. True crime, true crime. So I got very excited. I saw a commercial of a new movie that's coming out. It's a Clint Eastwood movie. And I was like, okay, we got to get on this.
Okay.
We got to get this story out there before December 13th.
I don't know what it is.
I'm trying to build suspense.
It's too much suspense. Let's go.
It's killing you. Okay, so this is about Richard Jewell.
Okay.
Do you know who Richard Jewell is?
Richard Jewell.
J-E-W-E-L-L.
Richard Jewell. No, I don't. I've never heard of
Dick
him.
Dick Jewell.
Is that what he goes by?
No.
Oh.
Anyway, so we're going to talk about Richard Jewell, and there's a movie coming out on December 13th, 2019, and it's just called Richard Jewell, and it is about him and his story.
Okay.
So what I want to do is kind of tell you about his story now, because I think that having this background is going to be exciting to know about him and hear about him and then go watch the movie.
Sure.
We're not sponsored by this movie, but I'm just really excited about it. So I wanted to... Can you be sponsored? I don't know. Clint Eastwood, hit us up. Yo. Just kidding. But
we're shooting too high for our sponsors.
We're aiming really high for sponsors. So anyway, so Richard Jewell was born on December 17th, 1962. So they're going to have the movie out a couple days before his birthday.
Should put it on his birthday. Well, maybe. I don't they know who he is. It. Is he a hero, a villain?
Only well, time will tell. That's what we're going to talk about. Okay. Up for debate for a while. So he's born December 17th, 1962 in Danville, Georgia. He was originally born Richard Allensworth White. His parents were Bobby and Robert or Earl White. Bobby was an insurance claims coordinator, and Robert Earl White worked for Chevrolet.
Okay.
So his parents divorced when he was only 4 years old. His mom remarried John Jewell, who was an insurance executive, and John adopted Richard. That's how he came to be Richard Allensworth Jewell. I kind of like the name Allensworth.
Yeah, it's a cool
seems
name.
Very distinguished.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Richard Jewell, you know, growing up and becoming a young man, he worked several jobs. He, like, wanted to be a police officer. That was kind of his dream job.
Okay.
But he was perfectly happy working security. He wanted to be making a difference, keeping people safe.
Okay.
So.
Where did he work security at?
Several places.
Is he a bouncer?
No, not really. He worked as a police deputy in some neighboring counties to where he grew up. But when we find him in 1996, he has moved back home.
1996?
Oh, that's when you were born.
That's when I was born.
Yes, you would have been a few months old at the time our story takes place.
Oh, nice. Cool. Okay.
So Richard Jewell had moved back home with his mom after... He had been a security guard a couple other places, but he wanted to move back home, be closer to his mom, and
back
try and
to
find
Georgia,
work.
Right?
Well, he's always been in Georgia, but he's moving back to Danville, Georgia.
Oh, just
Georgia.
With his mom. And okay.
Correct. And actually, in the summer of 1996, he found work in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
As a security guard for AT&T for the Summer Olympics
of 1996, okay.
Which were held in Atlanta, Georgia.
Cool.
Right. I didn't even realize there was a Summer Olympics in 1996 because I was 2 years old.
Yeah, I would have been like 3 months.
Maybe. I don't know what month that they started in. But this was the 26th Summer Olympics. These were called the Centennial Olympic Games, and it was the centennial or 100th year celebration of when the games were first held in Athens.
Okay.
That's a big deal to people because the first Olympic Games were thought to be Grecian and held in Athens.
Didn't they do it naked?
I don't know. To tell you the truth, that's a whole nother podcast that would keep me up at night. But this was the first Summer Olympics that was held on a different year than the Winter Games since 1924. So for a while, from like 1924 until prior to 1996, they would have the Winter and the Summer Games on the same year.
Did it just happen to fall like that, or?
No, I think that they made the decision to switch it.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure, but what I do know is that it was the 26th Summer Olympics, and it was held on a different year from the Winter Olympics, and this one happened to be in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
They had made an area that was, like, the main gathering area for the games, like the Olympic Village kind of is in most
years. The entrance where all everything is, people can go. Right,
exactly, where most people can hang out waiting for the games to happen, and this they called Centennial Park.
Okay.
That was the name of this area.
Fancy.
So, Mr. Jewell got a job working security for the Olympics in the AT&T. I don't know if they were the sponsors or if they just had the stage area particularly working.
Yeah.
So he was hopeful that he would get a job with the police eventually, but back in this area. But for now, he decided he was going to just go ahead and take the security job because they needed a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, you get money if you just recently moved back.
Right. And he's staying with his mom, so, you know, he's happy just, you know, being part of the games.
Right. Yeah, that'd be super cool to, like, because I bet you get free stuff.
Right, and so his job was really cool because he was working around the area where they were having, like, the entertainment stage. He would work a 12-hour shift by the light and sound tower next to the stage where famous acts would perform, famous bands.
Okay.
So on July 27th, 1996, this is...
I'm sorry, July
27th of 1996. Got it. That is the day where our main story takes place. July 27th of 1996. Yes. That's Dad's birthday.
Yeah, right? I was going to say.
Yeah. 727, right?
Yep. Yeah. All birthdays this episode. I don't know if we want... Is it a celebration episode?
No.
Okay, I was like, I don't know what this is about still.
So Mr. Jewell was working the 12-hour shift by the soundstage, and he was very excited because Jack Mack and the Heart Attack were coming on at 12:45.
I don't know who that is, but I like the name.
I don't know either, but I really feel like we should find a picture of them or listen to their music. But he was really excited. And what Mr. Jewell would do is he had like a bench next to the stage with a little tent over it, and he would keep a cooler there, and he would go fill it with ice and keep different sodas in case a actual policewoman would come by or a lady who was pregnant or somebody who...
Just keep everybody
was
hydrated,
tired,
kind
and
of.
He could offer them a place to rest and a beverage because he felt like that was a kind thing to do.
Yeah.
So at this point...
If you're working security, it's... He's making his job easier if he's making sure nobody's passing out. Or...
Right, and he really respects police officers, so he really wants to make sure that they're being taken care of.
Yeah, for sure.
So during this evening, so he's waiting for Jack Mack and the Heart Attack to come on. There's other bands playing.
They're supposed to come on at 12:40, like in the afternoon?
No, in the at night. This
so
is
like
at night.
12:45 a.m.?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
Okay.
I
was just trying to, I'm picturing it in my mind. I want to know if it was sunny out or if it was dark
No,
out.
It was kind of dark in the, you know, because they had the lights in the sound, stage going. So anyway, he at one point before the band came on, he had to rush to the restroom. Mm-hmm. His stomach had kind of been bothering him, and he told his mom, you know, I'm still going to work, but because his bench was really close to, like, the porta potties.
Yeah, so he was like, I'll just run over.
Yeah, but he was like, I think I had a bad hamburger yesterday. Yeah. My stomach's really been bothering me. So he, you know, he got his ice ready, got his Coca-Colas, and then he ran to the restroom. So when he came out of the restroom, he got really frustrated because somebody had left a backpack next to his bench. And he was kind of mad because a lot of people who were drinking or doing drugs or, like, partying in the area, they just leave their stuff around. And this happened, like, the week before. And he was trying to figure out whose it was because he's a good guy. And he's, like, trying to figure out.
And also, like, if someone just leaves your backpack and they're, like, intoxicated, you don't know what's in there. It could be their wallet, all their money for the day, their, you know what I mean? Right. Like, they might need it.
And you don't want to be responsible for it. Mr. Jewel said it was an olive green Alice backpack, which is a style that's, like, a military-style backpack.
Okay.
And he was sitting by his bench. He scolded some drunk guys because they kept getting in the way of a camera lens nearby. So he was, like, trying to get them to, like, move.
Yeah.
And then he was mad about this backpack. But he ended up getting the attention of Mr. Tom Davis.
Okay.
Who was part of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. I think he was just kind of making his rounds in the area. It's not entirely clear how he got in contact with him. But it seems like he kind of knew Tom. And he mentioned the backpack.
Who was making the rounds? Tom or?
Tom was.
Okay.
Richard didn't leave his area.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I was like, okay. Well, I didn't know if he, like, saw him as he was, like, going to the bathroom or whatever, but
I'm not sure, but he ended up getting Tom's attention somehow. I was like, hey, no one's claiming this backpack. And they kind of joked about, well, you better look at it. You better figure out whose it is. But no one, when no one claimed it, and, like, everyone around's like, what are you talking about? Like,
leave what's us alone. In the box?
Yeah. What's in that box?
What's in the box?
Richard kind of started to worry. He's like, as a law enforcement person, you know, you want to try and help people out. If they lose something, you want to try and help. But eventually,
but also,
why is there a large backpack
and no one's claiming it? Yeah,
and no one's claiming it.
I'm getting bad feelings, bad vibes from this backpack.
Right. So he started going over a checklist to try and get a hold of a supervisor for light and sound because he was like, something's not right here.
Yeah. Okay.
Something's wrong. So at some point in time, Richard and Tom look at the backpack.
Okay.
And they realize that inside is a pipe bomb.
Oh, that's not good.
No, very, very bad.
It's very bad.
We're in the middle of a concert area with a bunch of intoxicated people around. Yeah. Cat on the table, 50 points. And he's trying to get a hold of the tower for light and sound because they're right next to it. So if this bomb goes off, it could damage the tower. He doesn't know if they'll get hurt. And then him and Mr. Davis clear a 25-square-foot radius around the bag while they were waiting for the GBI, Georgia Bureau of Investigation, to bring in a bomb squad.
Okay.
To try and, like, figure out what to do with it.
Okay.
To shut it down or what they need to do.
I don't really know much about bombs. I don't know anything about bombs. I don't even really know what a pipe bomb looks like. Can pipe bombs be big? I always picture them as, like, smaller.
They're homemade. I should have done a little more research into it, but as far as my understanding, they're made to be small and they're made to be homemade things that people use for terrorist events. Like, that's what they are.
Are these the ones that you can put shrapnel in it so when they explode,
yes.
stuff goes everywhere?
Yes, okay.
So it's more for, like, the injury, not necessarily for, like, the giant explosion.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
So what Richard did not know is that a 911 call had already been made anonymously shortly after 12 a.m.
Okay.
And it was a warning. They said there's a bomb in Central Park. It will go off in 30 minutes.
Oh, shoot. Okay, so what time was this that they looked in the backpack?
So 13 to 18 minutes after the phone call and 2 to 3 minutes after Richard started evacuating the area. So that would be around... So he probably found it around 12:10 a.m.
Okay.
But we're looking at, like, 12:15-ish. Oof. The bomb detonates.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. So it was actually three pipe bombs surrounded by a 3-inch long masonry nails. The bomb was made from nitroglycerin, dynamite, an alarm clock, steel plates, and Rubbermaid containers. And
alarm clocks?
An alarm clock, nitroglycerin, dynamite, steel plates, and Rubbermaid containers.
So okay, this is okay, a very okay, okay. homemade bombs. Right. Okay, I got
and
you.
And like you were talking about before, people put shrapnel in pipe bombs. The nails were the shrapnel. So they were all sticking out.
So like when it explodes, those just get flying everywhere.
Right. So those, the bomb itself might not have had a big
Fiery blast. Explosion, but it was like...
Right. And I'm not entirely sure because they cleared a 25-foot mm-hmm. area. I'm not sure that it would have necessarily...
25 feet doesn't seem that big.
It doesn't seem. I think it was a radius.
Well, still.
They say square foot area, and it still isn't very much, but they weren't sure what it was.
That's true, yeah.
And you have a bunch of drunk people at a concert. How are you getting their attention?
And there's just two of them, too, I guess, if it was still just him and
Correct. And Tom. This is, you know, Richard's going through a checklist in his head. He's trying to get a hold of his supervisor. They're trying to signal the tower.
Yeah.
Trying to make people move. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the bomb goes off.
Oof. Okay.
So, in the chaos and the damage of the bomb, 111 people were injured by the nails.
Yeah.
One woman, Alice Hawthorne, 44 years old, of Albany, Georgia, was actually killed by nails penetrating her skull. And there was only one other fatality, and it was a Turkish radio and TV host, Mille Uzunyol. Uzunyol. He's 40 years old, and he actually was running towards the scene with his camera crew when he had a heart attack and died.
Oh.
So he didn't actually die from the explosion. He's 40 years old. That seems very young to me for him. But
what could have been all the chaos and
right, exactly. But 111 people were injured.
Wow.
The sound of the explosion was actually recorded by German public TV network ARD as they were interviewing a swimmer at a nearby hotel. And there was a video by Robert G.E.E. of California that later aired on CNN.
Wow.
So these were videos.
So it's in like the background of this.
Right. It's in the background.
Wonder how close they were.
To,
like, you know what I mean? Because if they're interviewing him, I bet they weren't close to, like, the stage.
No. So they could hear the sound of it.
Yeah.
Now, it's all, think like Olympic Village. It's all pretty close by.
Right, right.
So they heard the sound, but the other gentleman, Robert G.E.E. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
He actually was able to film part of the explosion.
Wow, okay.
I'm not sure how close he was to the actual area, though.
Was he just, like, a bystander? Like, was he filming the... Do you know?
I'm not entirely sure. Because
I'm wondering, like...
They didn't say his title. The other...
Well, he could have just been there, just like...
He might have just been there. Although, 1996, I don't know what... It's not like people were walking around with their cell phones.
Right, right.
It probably had an actual video camera of some kind.
Could have been another reporter or something.
Right. And I don't know if he's part of the news or
what.
Immediately following the incident, Richard Jewell was hailed as a hero because he discovered the bomb and was able to evacuate many people from the area.
Yeah.
So he was able to save a lot of... Yeah, he's not talked about as much more because, you know, it's kind of his job.
Yeah.
Yes, Richard Jewell's job is security.
Well, Richard found it, I guess.
He found it and he got Tom on board, but they were hailed as heroes for evacuating the area.
Okay.
Now... as the FBI started their investigation into what was happening, of course, you know, they make a profile. You watch all these CSI shows, and they always make a profile.
Prodigal Son.
Always look at, we've been watching The Prodigal Son. We should talk about that on the intro next time. But you always look at the person who, you always look at the spouse if there's a murder. You always look at the person who found the bomb.
I guess.
So, of course... Because he was the first one to notice it, they have to first question Richard Jewell. Now, it's kind of
in my mind, the thing was, like, there was the anonymous phone call, right? So, like, that person was probably, like, the person who, like, again, if someone, like, murders somebody, they sometimes go back to, like, the scene of the crime or want to involve themselves in it. But it doesn't make sense to me that he would involve himself so much as to try and save people from the bomb.
So,
unless they thought, like, he planted it and wanted to be a hero.
Exactly.
And
Richard Jewell fit their profile that they created of a lone bomber or lone wolf.
Okay.
And basically what they said about this person was that they like to create chaos. And in the sense of Richard Jewell, they were looking at him as somebody who could have planted the bomb so that he could evacuate people, so that he could be a hero. And this is a thing, you know.
It's like those people who are, like, cause traffic accidents, so they can be the first on the scene, or are doctors or whatever. There's stories about people who, like, give people stuff to make them sicker, and then they save their lives.
Right, so there's people who will cause an accident or cause someone's heart to stop so they can perform CPR
and, like, save
and
them.
Be the hero. Right, so that's what they were looking at here. And it is, like, a mental illness type of a deal where the person believes that what they're doing is right.
I guess they would have maybe brought in the fact that he wanted to be a police officer.
So that's exactly it. When they were looking into him, you're really on it. When they were looking at him, you know, they were thinking, well, he's always wanted to be a police officer. He's not really been able to make it as a cop. He's been bouncing around jobs, but this would be his opportunity to really be a hero.
Right.
So I don't know how much of this was originally the FBI saying this amount, Richard. Basically what happened was that the FBI had come up with this profile and said, we have to look at Richard as a suspect because he could kind of fit the profile, but also we gotta either prove that he did it or didn't. Like, either way, we gotta question
him. Tom was there too.
Right. I mean, you have to question everybody that was there.
Yeah.
But what happened was, unfortunately, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is a news organization in the area, were given, basically the FBI leaked information to them.
Oh.
And so they started, they don't know, somebody within the organization told them this so that they could run a story about it.
Huh.
Yeah. So the Atlanta Journal-Constitution took the story and just ran with it. They stated that a former Piedmont College employer, Piedmont College was a place where Richard Jewell used to work security, and they were saying that his former employer called the FBI to say that he was worried about Richard and they should look into him as a suspect. It was said that the Piedmont College employer had said he was a badge-wearing zealot, and he would issue tickets off-campus and write out long, detailed reports on things that were basically minor incidents. He was often overstepping his job description.
Interesting.
He had a history of working security and busting parties without calling the police for backup. He would call it in and then make his way in and just try to take care of it himself. He was even in trouble once for impersonating a police officer. So the media began portraying him as this failed law enforcement wannabe who planted a bomb so he could depict himself as a hero.
Is this stuff true, though?
We don't know.
Okay.
So
does Richard, because Richard, it's probably like a he said, she said.
It's a she shed.
It's a she shed. My she shed burnt down.
It's okay. My she shed's covered. But we don't know.
Okay.
So at this point, you know, there's anonymous tips. There's the guy from the college was like, hey, you should look into him.
Right, right.
And I don't know how much of this is what was told to the FBI.
Yeah.
And how much of it is what the news media tried to dig up.
Right, okay.
So
they went snooping around, asking around, and somebody.
Right. So most of it is probably that. They're running a story to try and make him look bad.
Yeah. Well, if the FBI leaked information, they could have said, hey, this guy from Piedmont College called in a tip.
Right.
And then the news reporter went down there to talk to him, and then he gave all that information.
Right. And at one point, he was actually interviewed. He, like, did an interview about why he thought he did it. So, basically, the media starts attacking Richard Jewell. They start calling him a fat, failed Una doofus, Jay Leno.
What does that mean?
So, Jay Leno was making a comparison to the Unabomber.
Oh,
so I guess
okay.
It'd be Unadoofus. And they were calling him Unabubba and calling his mom Unamama and a wannabe cop. So they were just calling him all these names.
Okay. First of all, why are they attacking his mom? His mom probably had...
The media's mean.
Yeah.
And he's a gentleman who has just moved back home with his mom.
Yeah,
and
I guess they're just trying to tear him, like... Whoever did the bombing's a bad guy, so if they thought it was a bad guy, they're probably trying to make fun of him, too, but...
No matter what, you know, the FBI is investigating, and then you have the media attacking him.
Yeah.
So, through this process, you know,
wait,
there comes a
arrested?
Point... I'm getting there.
Okay, sorry.
Slow your roll.
I didn't know if he was arrested during all this, or if it happened.
No, so this is kind of how the media starts attacking him.
Okay.
And in the meantime, he's like, what are they talking about? Like, I thought I wasn't a suspect. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what's happening. And he starts getting, they start getting threatening phone calls to him and his mom because somebody in the media leaked his mother's home phone number.
They got doxxed.
Hmm?
They got doxxed.
Doxxed? What is that?
It's basically like people dox you. They put all your information online.
Yeah, I mean, basically that's what it was. So they were saying, you know, you raised a monster, you killed a person and then injured 111 people if you're the one that planted this bomb.
Yeah.
It was just an all-out attack on them.
Yeah, I mean, it's
them.
Horrible, because so I could see why people would attack them.
So, now I want to talk about the FBI investigation. So the actual FBI investigation makes me more mad than that does.
Okay.
So the FBI call Richard Jewell and we're like, hey, do you mind coming to answer a few questions? And he said, well, you know, I thought I wasn't a suspect. And the person who he spoke to said, oh, no. We want to do a training video about bomb threat
situations. That's entrapment. You can't do that.
Let me finish. So he's like, oh, yeah, anything to help. Because
that's the kind of guy he is.
That's how Richard is. So they call
good
him
good or bad, that's the way he is. He'd go and make a video.
He would do anything.
The hero. Yeah.
He would do anything for the police because he respects them.
Yeah.
So he comes in for questioning to make this training video. They start asking him questions, and at one point they ask him for a voice sample because somebody called.
The anonymous caller, right?
Right. So they want a voice sample. Now, I don't know if this is the same day or not, but they asked for a voice sample at one point. What they do during this training video is, you know, they're asking him all these questions. He's getting kind of confused. He's like, why are you asking me this? And eventually somebody, like, knocks on the glass and says, hey, come here, to the investigator, and says, listen, you can't ask him anything else unless you read him his Miranda rights.
Yeah, even if they do and they're like, haha, we gotcha, that wouldn't hold up in court. So even if he did do and confess to it, right, isn't that a thing? Like, they're coerced into saying it. It would at least go to, like, a...
You have to know that you're under investigation.
Retrial. Like, that confession wouldn't count.
Right. It was handled poorly. So, what they do is, they go back in the room, and they say, you know what, Richard? We want to make this training video as realistic as possible.
Oh, my God.
So, I'm actually going to read you your Miranda rights as part of this training video.
If I ever get arrested for something that I, like, didn't do, I'm just not speaking.
You shouldn't. You really shouldn't. You should call a lawyer. This story about Mr. Jewell was a real roller coaster for me.
Yeah.
And at this point, when they're calling him in for questioning, even if they think he did
if you think he did it, why are you trying to trick him into it? Like, I get that, but at the same time, again, if you think he did it, this whole conversation that they're doing isn't going to stand up in court.
Right. It's not, it's inadmissible.
Yeah.
Because of the way they're doing it.
Right.
It makes me mad.
So, like, what are they trying to, what are they trying to get from this?
I don't know. They give him a lie detector test, which is administered by a gentleman who used to work for the FBI, which doesn't really make sense. The FBI is giving him a test administered by someone who used to work for the FBI. I don't really get that. They question everybody who knows him.
Okay.
So at this point, everybody around him
thinks that he did it.
Thinks he's a bad person. Mm. They put his house under 24-hour surveillance. And they ask to search his house, not once, but twice. They get warrants, and he says, of course, like, search, please yeah. search my house. If it'll clear my name, do it.
They're going to say, here's a pipe.
Yeah, it's a pipe. And a nail.
I don't.
I don't know that they found anything.
Yeah.
At some point during the FBI's investigation, Mr. Jewell calls his friend Watson Bryant.
Okay.
And Watson Bryant is like, listen, I'm not qualified to help you. He's like, but you're a lawyer. Yeah, I do real estate closings.
Oh, no.
I make sure that real estate deals go, like, get taken care of. And Richard basically is like, I trust you and I don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
So Watson Bryant steps up and, you know, starts trying to help him out. I think he's a bigger part of the movie, but I really struggled to find mm-hmm. information on him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to see more about that in the upcoming movie. But anyway, as the media firestorm continues, so the media is still bashing him and talking to all the people who know him and saying all these stories, the FBI conclude their investigation of Mr. Jewell. In October of 1996, so we went from July, September, mm-hmm. October, July, September, July, August, September, October.
Months are hard.
4 months.
4 months of just investigation.
Well, of from Richard being a hero
yeah.
to the media attacking him for 4 months.
To investigate, okay.
To now in October 1996, the investigating U.S. attorney, Kent, Alexander, in an extremely unusual act, because the FBI doesn't do this, they sent Mr. Jewell a letter formally clearing him of any wrongdoing. They said, based on the evidence developed to date, Richard Jewell is not considered a target of the federal criminal investigation into the bombing on July 27th, 1996 at Centennial Olympic Park in Atlanta.
Is this a trick?
No. So, actually,
oh God, okay.
The
I was like,
FBI tried really hard to pin this on him.
Yeah.
And after everything, after searching his house twice, after doing a lie detector test, after literally tricking him into...
Trying to trick him into
questioning or confessing, and after doing voice samples, they're like, we literally have nothing that says that you did this.
Right.
So, what does Richard do? After his world has been torn apart for 4 months, has gotten threatening phone calls, his name's been dragged through the mud with many things that aren't true.
He should sue for defamation of character.
You are really on it today.
Does he?
What does Mr. Jewell do?
Wait, I just want to let you guys know, I don't know anything about this story.
I haven't told her anything about this yet, so this is, she's doing
just
really
that there's
good.
A movie coming out, that's the only thing I knew.
So, Mr. Linwood, L-I-N space W-O-O-D, comes in and is like, you know what, Mr. Jewell, I'm going to represent you.
Yeah.
So he teams up with Watson Bryant. Now, Mr. Linwood has worked on cases, or works on cases, I'm not sure before or after this time, but
okay.
Such as the JonBenet Ramsey case, and ooh. Has represented Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil's gone to court?
Specializing in defamation lawsuits.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that makes sense. Mr. Linwood's like, all right, let's make a list. Piedmont College, the employer who gave false information to the media and the FBI, was sued and settled for an undisclosed amount. Okay. So Richard won the case.
Good.
NBC news media outlet was sued for $500,000 and Mr. Jewell won. The New York Post was sued for $15 million but settled out of court for an undisclosed amount. Richard Jewell wins again. CNN is sued for an undisclosed, well, is sued for a lot of money, settles for an undisclosed amount, but stands by their, what they said. They said what we wrote was fair and accurate. I don't know what exactly they
yeah,
wrote.
Yeah, I'd have to look into it.
Because
if they wrote, I guess if they wrote, like, Richard Jewell, suspect, you know.
So a lot of them said things like he's a suspect, but a lot of them also said, like, wannabe police officer.
Was a terrible guy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
they basically slandered his name.
Yeah.
Now, the Atlanta...
It wasn't straight facts.
Correct.
It's fake news.
Now, some of them would say, you know, we were given...
Certain information. Yeah.
And that's what the Atlanta Journal-Constitution newspaper, the local newspaper that ran the story first, they said, we were given this information and we ran the story.
Yeah.
And he actually lost the lawsuit against them.
Yeah. Well, if they were the first, maybe they had more facts and then everybody else just kind of took it.
Right. They ran with what they were given.
Yeah.
Now, later on, there was an appeal against this, but it was rejected by the Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm. Bless you. Let me cross you.
Ouch, thank you. So, all in all, I would say that Mr. Jewell ended up with a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Several undisclosed amounts, $500,000 for NBC. I think he's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
So, in the aftermath of this, he is held once again as a hero, right. Although his reputation is tarnished, so people know.
Sure, people still think that he did it.
People do, because they had not caught anybody who was responsible at this time. But he did appear on SNL, Saturday Night Live, on September 27th, 1997. And he joked as he fended off accusations about Princess Diana and Mother Teresa's deaths during the show.
Oh, my God.
He's like, yeah, I did it, sure. So he went on to become a deputy police officer in Pendergrass, Georgia, and Meriwether County, Georgia.
Okay.
He would place a rose on the site every year where Alice died, the one lady who was killed, right. Alice... Hawthorne.
He would place,
yeah, he would place a rose on her, the site where she actually died every year.
Mm-hmm.
He would always go back there. In September 2000, he got engaged to a lady named Dana, D-A-N-A, and eventually they got married. They met at a drug raid. When he was a police officer in Jefferson County, which is 51 miles north of Atlanta.
Hold on.
He met this girl. She kind of stuck around after everybody cleared out. I think people came to, like, watch what was going on.
Okay, she was a bystander.
Oh, I don't think she was part of it. No. Drugs. No, but she stuck around afterwards, and he said, quote, "I think she kind of might have liked me." And so he gave her his jacket because it was gold. Oh, it was so cute.
That's adorable.
But they ended up getting married. And then, I'm not going to go into too much detail about this because this is about Mr. Jewell. But in April 13th, 2005, Eric Rudolph was arrested and convicted of the bombing.
I was going to ask you if they found him.
Right, yes, along with three others. So he planted other pipe bombs that caused explosions and other injuries, although I didn't look up the exact numbers because, again, I don't think he deserves my attention.
Wait, how long ago?
In 2005. So he, almost 10 years.
Wow, how'd they find him?
Eventually, they had enough evidence against him.
Again.
After three other bombings, like, they closed in on him.
You meant throughout the years there were three others.
Correct.
Okay.
So, he was eventually arrested and convicted of the crime. Now, Mr. Jewell actually passed away on August 29th, 2007, at the age of 44, after suffering from severe heart disease, kidney disease, and diabetes, which I find very sad.
Yeah.
But he was survived by his mother, his wife, Dana, and I think that he went on to leave. I mean, he was living his dream of being a police officer, and, it seems like he lived a pretty happy life afterwards.
Yeah. Jeez, Louise.
But it makes me sad, because he passed away, and he never got to see, he got to see, thank goodness, someone else be convicted of the crime.
Yeah, true.
And his name officially. I mean, the FBI cleared his name.
Yeah.
But just officially.
Yeah, but people aren't gonna, I don't think people will, even if the FBI clears your name, if they don't go into detail about it, a lot of people might think, oh, well, they just don't have enough evidence to convict him. That doesn't mean he didn't do it.
Right, and that's
what they
So
once they have
said.
Somebody else in custody and arrested, you know, I think that's when people will start being like, okay,
right. He I didn't mean, do there's it. Always speculation up until, you know, someone else is actually convicted.
Well, probably even now.
So, roller coaster of a story.
Yeah.
I started out loving Richard Jewell, and then I was kind of like, wait a minute. But by the end, I was like, gosh darn it, he's just a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I think that he really got, he really went through heck, the poor guy.
Yeah.
But he ended up, you know, married in the end to his sweetheart. And
they found the guy that did it.
They found the guy that did it, yeah.
Oof.
So what do you think? About Mr. Jewell. We're going to see this movie. Like, I've
already
made the decision.
Yeah, of course,
And it looks really good. If you have a minute, go look at the trailer. They actually depict him having to do the voice recording.
Yeah.
And the FBI getting... Oh, I didn't tell you about that.
What? Oh.
In addition to all the lawsuits, several members of the investigation into Richard Jewell, the people who basically had him in the... interrogation room who lied to him about his Miranda rights. Several of them were suspended and or let go.
Of course they were.
Although, if you ask Dad, he says this happens all the time. Things like this happen all the time.
Yeah.
The FBI
I mean, how many stories... Well, it's not even that they're framing anyone, but they just don't do their job properly, or they miss something, you know what I mean, or whatever.
Sometimes the justice system wants justice so badly that I think that they'll go through...
I mean, it's a horrible tragedy, so if they can't find the person, then they're going to try and pin it on some... I mean, they're going to try and find the person that fits most things. If they can't find the exact person, they're probably going to go to the next person, and maybe that was Richard, you know what I mean?
And I think that some of them probably truly thought he did
it. Did it, yeah, for sure.
And they just needed him to say it.
Yeah.
And I think that being so wrapped up in the moment and so wrapped up in trying to figure this all out that they probably lost themselves a little
bit.
Lost sight of what was important, which is the actual justice of the situation.
Yeah, but absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know. This stuff is horrible because, I mean, just tragedies like this where bombs are planted in, like, the middle of an open space where people are there to have fun and, like, compete and, you know, just have a good time. Like, that's horrible. And then it's horrible for Richard, who got, you know, arrested and all this stuff happened to him. And I'm sure it hurt his life for that period of time. You know, that stuff's just awful.
Yeah. And I think, so the movie itself is really showing the media firestorm, I believe. But again, it just looks so good. I could not talk about
this. You guys watch it
too,
and then we'll talk about it.
This isn't necessarily the type of keep you up at night where it's creepy. To me, this was the...
Yeah, but it's like...
It makes you really think about...
It's real life. Like, I know some of the art stuff is like real life, but like, this is it. Like,
yeah.
It's keeps you up at night in the way that like an innocent person could potentially be blamed for something. And like, depending on how it goes, there's nothing you can do about it.
Right, and it is frustrating to me just because he was a good guy.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't the best at what... He kind of reminds me of Paul Blart. And I'm not trying to be mean
Paul
to Mr.
Blart Mall Cop is a good movie, so...
It's a good movie, but he's, like, an overweight guy, and he's really trying his best.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, Richard Jewell, he was just a nice man.
Yeah.
From what I saw and what I read.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Anyway, this story, I'm glad I got to get it off my chest and tell it to you because I've really been both excited about the movie and frustrated that this happened. And, I was 2 years old, but I didn't even know there was a bombing at the Summer Olympics on U.S. soil. Like, I had no idea. And you didn't know? How dare you not pay attention, you four-month-old?
No, that's awesome. It's awesome that they're making a movie about it to tell the story of what happened so people know about it.
I'm trying to think of the lady who plays Kathy Bates is playing his mom.
Really?
In the movie, she's good. She's good. They've got a good cast put together.
She's an Annie, right?
Yes. Wait.
Yes. Easy Street.
Yeah, she's
done.
Easy Street. Oh, no, it's a musical again.
It is a musical again.
Anyway, I hope that you liked the story today. Mm-hmm. I found it really interesting. Please let us know what you think.
Yeah, and
please.
Get your tickets. And if you guys watch and you want to talk to us about it, you know, shoot us a message.
Yeah, we definitely want to hear from you. Also, if you leave us a comment on iTunes or Facebook, remember that you can screenshot it and send it to our email, biarpodcast@gmail.com, and send us your address along with that email, and we will send you a sticker when it comes in.
Yes, you can also send us those in any of the DMs. You can send it to us on Instagram or Twitter. We're at biarpodcast. You can also send us the screenshot in Facebook Messenger. Whitney gets on that a lot.
Yes, ma'am.
So yeah, any of those ways, like, you know, go ahead and send it. We'll mail you your stickers.
Just don't post your address
on
our pages.
Yeah,
like,
don't
publicly.
Send us a message. Send us a message.
That's the only reason, you know, we don't want your information getting out there. And then if you end up in a situation like Mr. Jewell.
Yeah, and somebody puts in the media.
And you get, you know, hateful messages from fans who don't know their mouth from their butt.
Okay.
What's the saying? That's
I don't
not
know.
It.
Winnie, we just had a conversation about how I'm not good with sayings.
It's like their butt from a hole in the ground. Oh, so it is.
I think that's what, like, Pap says or something like that.
I don't know. You don't want people who don't know their butt from a hole in the ground.
Yeah, maybe.
To be saying mean things.
There you go. Lesson learned. But anyway, reach out to us, whether it be for the stickers or not. You know, leave us some...
If you don't want a sticker, it's okay. It's okay. I'll just keep them for myself.
Just keep them all.
We can have an accent wall in we'll our carpet of stickers. No, we're not putting them on the cats.
Okay.
We could put one on the cat.
We could put one on the cat.
Anyway, thanks for joining us tonight. I hope that this story doesn't keep you up at night, other than with excitement for the movie that's coming out.
True.
And I hope that you are still able to sleep
as snug
as a bug
in a rug. Signing off, my name's Caitlin.
I'm Whitney.
Bye.
Sleep tight.